All right, everybody. It is now 7:09, and it's Man vs. Mob Radio time. So usually my slot is 7 to 8. I apologize for starting late. But I am your host, Patrick Clerkin, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. So if you haven't heard my voice before, I have had about 3 or 4 episodes now during the fall semester. And if you haven't heard of Man vs. Mob Radio, the gist of it is that my goal is to make you think, to challenge you, and to entertain you. So if I've done those three things, then I've done my job. Let's see. So I do have a guest tonight. His name is Tom, and he's out right now. He's going to be here in a moment, but I will be talking with him about various things. So the format of the show tonight is actually going to be purely talk. It's not going to be any music. Sometimes I have music, but tonight it's going to be fully talk. Let's see, what else? Okay, so I'm reading a book right now called Everyday Chaos, and there's a topic in the book called Minimum Viable Product, and that's basically when a tech company releases a product that, instead of trying to predict exactly what the customer is going to use the product for and how they're going to use it, they release a very stripped down version of the product. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with my radio program and my podcast. I want you to really tell me what you want added to the program and the different things that you want to see in the program. I don't want to try to predict everything that you want, so please participate in as many ways as possible. I've already had some great suggestions that I'm trying to figure out and incorporate into the show. Friend Oliver Mesmer said today that I should add a segment called Things That Piss Me Off. I'm definitely going to do that. You will hear tonight one of those things. I had another friend, Ryan Emmerich, tell me that I should introduce myself with my full name, which I'm doing from now on. It's Patrick Clerkin. So I was also told by, who was it? Somebody else had told me to, my friend Mike Lucarello, he told me that I should try to record these episodes and add them onto my RSS feed. The RSS feed is on www.manversmobpodcast.com. So I found out that I can't actually record these radio segments. So that's why it's important that you listen live and, as I've been saying, contribute. So if you want to make a suggestion, if you want to just talk or bring up a topic or a criticism or a request, really anything, the studio line is 855-915-9636. So I will try to repeat that continuously throughout the show. That was another suggestion that somebody made. And then the final suggestion that somebody made, I don't exactly remember who, was that I should try to live stream so that I have live stream video so that I actually have a visual component to the show. I do have an awesome webcam that I bought a while back, and an analogic webcam. I have not incorporated that yet, but it is my goal to at some point have video. So my guest Tom just came into the studio, and I don't think his mic is on. Or which mic are you on? What does your mic say on the back? That little number right there.
Mic 3.
Mic 3. All right. I'll turn mic 3 on. Can you hear yourself? Can you hear me?
Testing, testing.
Oh, awesome.
It sounds like I can hear myself just fine.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
And let me say that I love your choice of choosing, dropping the Y at the end of your name. So
dropping
instead
the
of
y.
The Tommy, mm-hmm. the Tom, like it's a very adult name. That's a pet peeve of mine is when people stick with the more kid-like versions of their names, like Joey and Timmy and mm-hmm. Tommy and Mikey and all that. Like, mm-hmm. I just think at some point you've got to drop the Y.
It's like, what are we doing now? You know,
exactly. So you know, I want to commend you for that.
Wow, thank you. I mean, I don't think it's quite an honor. I don't think anyone's quite put it so eloquently as you have. But you know, I'm glad someone, you know, of my intellect can appreciate the nuances of shortening your name and making everybody believe you're much more mature than you really are.
Making people believe that I'm more mature than I am, I'm definitely not very mature, so I don't want people to think I'm more mature than I actually am.
Clearly. Who put you on this radio?
I don't know.
What are we doing?
Who trusted me to have a radio program? But
exactly.
But I would say that the only person that's ever gotten away with the no, not the only person, but the most prominent mm-hmm. Tommy that I know of is Tommy Lee Jones.
And oh, Tommy Lee Jones. Okay.
There's only one Tommy Lee Jones.
So. Well, I mean, it's the Lee part. That's it's true. Like Tammy Lee, Tammy Lou.
Oh, you're saying the hyphen saves it?
Okay. Oh, that, yeah, it saves it. Oh, yeah.
That makes sense.
Makes a huge difference. Okay. It has that ring to it, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Like Ricky Bobby.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's like an asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let me get into, I was just mentioning before, mm-hmm. this is the first what pisses me off. So
right.
tonight, the topic is cupcakes, because I just do not understand cupcakes and why people are obsessed with cupcakes. And I don't understand why people are willing to pay $15 for a boutique cupcake. You know, originally that was just the cupcake, right? Mm-hmm. And that was just a crappier little version of a cake.
Yeah.
So then people eat like six cupcakes instead of a slice of cake or
and
whatever.
And they were tiny, right? They
yeah.
Were.
Well, there was the cupcake, and then mm-hmm. they came out with the micro cupcake, and then they came out with the cupcake pops and the cupcake push pops, and then they came out with the ice cream cupcakes.
Wait,
was that shot cake? Shot cakes
hold on.
At the mall?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Cupcake push pops?
Yeah. You know
the sherbet little things? The sherbet?
Yeah, exactly. Like those, but filled with cake.
How do you make... Okay. All
you
right.
just fill it with cake and frosting. But so, okay, right. the straw that broke the camel's back for me mm-hmm. is when they made a giant cupcake.
A giant.
And at that point, you've just recreated the cake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand all this thrill with cupcakes. So,
yeah.
And then you get flavors like red velvet, which you're not tricking me. It's just chocolate dyed red.
it's chocolate a fraud. Is there really raspberry in there?
I don't know what the deal is with
well, maybe not the frosting part, but I never understood like the you're talking about like the cake part in the center. It's like a reddish brown and makes you want to believe, oh, that's chocolate raspberry, but it's like, I don't know, it tastes like chocolate to me.
I just don't, yeah, I don't get it. I mean, whatever. I'm not going to try to wring too much more out of this mm-hmm. topic, but
what are they selling?
You'll find that little tiny things, maybe food items. Oh, circus peanuts is another one. This is a twofer. The candy circus peanuts. Have you ever had those? You know what I'm talking about, Tom?
Yes, sadly I do. That's a guilty pleasure of mine. So.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
I think you're effing with me, but it's an orange. It's a dried out orange marshmallow.
It might as well be.
Looks like a peanut, and that's flavored like banana.
Mm.
And I don't know who the hell ever purchased these and consumed the package of them.
You got me, but I mean. I don't know. On a lonely Friday night, sometimes those circus peanuts come in real handy
circus
when I'm feeling
peanuts.
Down. Yes, they bring me up.
Well, we did an experiment, and people do this all the time at their place of work, where they put things out on the table that they don't want, mm-hmm. things that are kind of just nasty, like a half-eaten bag of candy corn, and or do you know what Good and Plenty is? Those licorice pills.
Oh yeah. Like
you go, who eats this stuff? And somebody brings it into work, puts it on the table, and mm-hmm. it's gone in 15 minutes. Somebody
just snatched those. And you're like,
are like rodents. They just come in and they eat whatever's there. Yeah, it's nuts.
The scum of the earth at the offices. But you look one way, you look back, you're like, what the? I wouldn't touch that with a 39.5-inch pole, but it's gone. Yeah, what's another crappy ass candy? Well, you said candy corn. Jeez, I mean, I know I'm a degenerate for liking, I can't forget. Degenerate for liking.
A degenerate.
I know. I can't even remember all the degenerate stuff I like to
you're
eat,
an
like
Ellen
circus
degenerate.
Peanuts. There we go. So I know I'm a degenerate for eating circus peanuts, but you know,
I still
candy
don't believe
corn,
you.
I can't
circus
touch that.
Circus peanuts is irredeemable.
No? Okay, well, hear me out. Okay, you want to hear
I'll
me
hear you
out?
I hear
all
anybody.
All right, so we got two disgusting things in candy corn and circus peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
But what puts circus peanuts over the top is that soft, styrofoamy, like, taste.
Styrofoamy
it's not,
isn't a word that you want to describe the food that you put into your body.
I don't know, man. There's
styrofoam
just something about
will
the texture.
Outlive all of us.
It's and just as
really
gross, but that texture.
Leaching through my system.
You know why leaching through your system? No? Styrofoam, man.
You didn't sell that very well at all. If you were trying to pitch circus peanuts and you described them as that styrofoamy texture,
foamy, soft, I don't know. It's softer. It's softer than
they're not even
candy
soft.
Corn.
They're
really
stale.
Are.
It's like they make them stale.
Yeah, it's like a stale-ish soft, you know.
Another thing I was really just, this threw me off.
What?
This kind of, I get a little bit of PTSD every time I think about mm-hmm. this, is I went with a friend to the Jordan's Furniture in Reading when I was probably in middle school, mm-hmm. and they got a bag, This is at the Jelly Bean place, the Jelly Belly World or whatever.
Yeah.
They got a bag full of all the candy there, a bag full of buttered popcorn flavored jelly beans.
Ooh, buttered popcorn?
That was nuts to me. Jeez. I said, this person is a serial killer.
I mean, they gotta be, right? I mean, what's next? So. Toblerone flavored jelly beans or...
Toblerone flavored jelly beans. I don't know where you came up with that, but that sounds somewhat good. That was a bad example to use.
Bad example. Such a bad guess so far.
Mayonnaise flavored jelly beans would have been an acceptable gross
mayonnaise
flavor.
Or, I don't know, sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut. Yeah, that's
sauerkraut
pretty bad
sauerkraut flavored.
One. Okay, that's a good one. You should have led with sauerkraut.
I know.
Toblerone.
God damn it.
But I'll
forgive
it.
Stupid Tom. That's the Tom Mimi coming out.
I gotta
suppress it. Yeah.
Oh no, he's hitting himself in the head now.
Yeah. gotta suppress it. Gotta, just like Bill Burr, just push it down.
Suppress the rage.
Forget about it. Suppress the rage. Suppress the idiocracy and pretend to be stoic.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Pretend to be stoic.
Pretend to be.
Wait, so if you pretend to be stoic, aren't you just stoic? And if you're succeeding at being stoic, then I think you are just stoic.
Yeah, I'm just fucking with you.
Okay. Oh, you can't say that on the radio. Well, I'll have to, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Give you a demerit. So let's hope that nobody heard what just happened.
Yeah.
But that's all right. So don't.
Man, how long has it
been?
Don't
do the What is it? The George Carlin words.
Oh, I see. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Kind of forgot we're in a college. My bad.
It's not that it's college. It's that it's public air waves. That's what it is. I don't think college students give S's or C's, D's, E's, all the dirty words about dirty words being said. But
now that you bring that up, I feel bad now. I apologize.
No, don't feel bad. I've done some things in my day.
Fine.
So
whatever.
Okay.
Thanks for telling me, because I wanted to rant about a specific topic, and now I can still rant about it. But
you can rant, but you have to be somewhat. It's unfortunate because you have to when you have to think exactly about the words you're using to articulate your rant. It takes the edge off the rant.
Kind of does, but
so
it'll be up to you.
We'll create a new studio where you can go in and just curse as much as you want.
Well, instead of it could still be PTV, unless you want to. Remember from Family Guy, PTV.
Grinds my gears. Okay, yeah.
And your name's Patrick.
That's my thing. It's kind of based off of. I know this exists in a lot of shows, but it's what pisses me off. It's what grinds my gears. Mm-hmm. So, I heard a story, or I read a story earlier today.
Yeah.
That you might find interesting. This was called "The Day the Dam Broke," and I think it was in the 1930s that it took place, and. Mm-hmm. Basically, there was a small town somewhere, and there was a guy running down the street, and then, I mean, I don't know why he was running down the street. The story said that it might have been he was missing an engagement with his wife or something like that, you know, an event that was planned. And then somebody else started running next to him. Maybe it was the paper boy. And then a couple more people started running because it's, I don't know, maybe it was like Forrest Gump where they're saying, oh, what are they, why are those people running? So,
it draws
you know, then it gets 15 people, 20 people. And then somebody said something like damn, and an old lady heard it as the dam is breaking. So she yells, the dam is breaking. Then 2,000 people in the town end up joining this stampede of people and they all end up running well past the borders of the town, and at some point it just occurs to people, wait a second, the dam hasn't actually broken, and they all just kind of return to their homes.
I see.
And I guess they sort of never really talked about it much, and I thought that was an interesting lesson in the power of crowds.
The power of that mob mentality.
That's what is kind of built into the title of this show, Man versus Mob. It's like, you know, stand alone with your intellect and judgment, and don't just join random crowds.
Yeah, because I mean,
mobs.
Mobs. Whether it's virtual Twitter mobs or real mobs with pitchforks, you know, don't.
Yeah, I don't know how many of those there are, but that's another thing. In the logo of my show, I put there's a brain and then a pitchfork and a torch. I'm hoping that people understand what that means.
For the intellectual individual, and the other two for the.
For the mob,
things.
Right?
Yeah, the mob.
Yeah, I think so. But some people go like, "What is this? A fork and a spoon or something?" I'm thinking.
What are you trying to say? Is there some type of manifesto you want to get across? You're not telling us.
I'm
you're
just
like,
thinking
no, no.
to myself, "You're." Yeah. I've either failed miserably at conveying what this is, or you're just really dumb. But, so there are a couple books that I want to mention to people, and I don't know how many people listening to this show are readers really, but related to that mob thing. And one of them is this book that I got the story that I was just discussing out of, which is a book that I'm reading right now called The Madness of Crowds by Douglas Murray. It's a very good book. So I recommend that one. I'll repeat
gonna
that
have to
one.
Read it.
The second one is called Crowds and Power by Elias Canetti, and the whole purpose of that book is to describe various types of mobs and crowds and how people, when they get together in groups, do things that they would never do as individuals.
Right.
They get worked up and will burn things and loot things and rip people apart and things like that. And then the third book is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed by Ron Johnson.
Wouldn't want to be that.
What is his name? It's John. Yeah, it's John Ronson.
John Ronson.
Yeah. Okay.
Say that That's three times name. Fast.
And so that book is particularly about the world of social media and how people will just, it's like the old school Coliseum where you would go to see somebody get torn apart. You'd see a gladiator get torn apart by lions or whatever. That's what Twitter mobbing is, right? So it talks about all these instances of people who have just, their lives have been ruined via Twitter because they've said something dumb.
Yeah, wasn't there a good example of that, how some woman posted something on a plane?
Yeah.
Like just some inane tweet that was taken out of context. And
her name eludes me right now.
Like from, and she took a nap, and then like when she woke up from like when the plane ride began, from when the plane ride ended, like her life as she knew it was essentially over.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking
about?
That
is exactly what, that's one of the things that it talks about in the book. And it's Justine Sacco. That's her name.
Justine Sacco.
So
okay.
For those of you unfamiliar with the story of Justine Sacco, she was, I thought she was in the HR department of some company, and she was heading to Africa, South Africa, I believe.
It was
a flight. And she sent out a tweet, a pretty ill-conceived tweet, I think most people would admit, particularly for somebody in HR. But the tweet said, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, lol, just kidding, I'm white. And then she turned off her phone, went on the flight, and didn't realize that over the course of the 12 hours or whatever that she was flying to South Africa, there was just a holy war brewing on social media, and everybody, not everybody, of course, but a lot of people wanted her head on a pike.
Yeah.
And so she was immediately fired. She realized all of what had happened when she got off the plane in the airport, and there was already kind of a mob, I believe, waiting for her at the airport.
The news waiting for her.
And one of her friends said, are you okay? Or did you hear what happened? And so her whole world fell apart after that. And some people say, good. She deserves it. She did a dumb thing. That's problematic to me. I think that one of our biggest issues today is that we basically just throw people in the dustbin once they've transgressed in some way. And there's not much sense of forgiveness anymore. And there's not much sense of, retribution isn't the word. There's not much sense of giving people
a second
redemption.
Chance?
Redemption. There's not much sense of redemption is what I was going to say. So I'm particularly disturbed by that. And one of the things that I really try to do is to get people to see the other side, regardless of how repulsed you are by what the other side has done. So
almost like walk a mile in her shoes, but instead of, you know, man walking a mile in a woman's shoes, just anybody in any scenario.
In anybody's shoes, regardless of how repulsive you think their behavior is or what they said is or anything, at some point you're going to say something or do something, and you don't deserve to be thrown into the bin. So
no.
Let's be a little bit more forgiving. So anyway, those three books, once again, are The Madness of Crowds by Douglas Murray, Crowds and Power by Elias Canetti, and So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. Check them out. So
I definitely will.
And this is just for you, Tom. This is for the people listening too. But
I know,
check
I'm so selfish. Well. I'm so selfish. I know. Please forgive me. I've already had one strike. Maybe that's my second strike.
That's your second strike. Third strike, you get tossed out the window.
Oh man, that's a long way down. You sure you want to do that to me?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I've always wanted to do a gravity experiment through one of these windows just to see.
A gravity experiment, but
well,
on a human.
Back in college, you can ask some of my former roommates. Sophomore year, we had a little bit of an obsession with dropping things out the window. So we dropped a rotten eggplant, rotten pumpkins, a giant jawbreaker, which was like, oh man, that was crazy. So there was a guy riding a skateboard down the street. There was nowhere near him. He was probably like 30 feet, 40 feet past. And the jawbreaker hit the ground, and it was in a bag. So, you know, like shrapnel wouldn't have shot out, but it hit the ground. It was like a meteor. It was crazy.
It just shattered in a million pieces.
Boom. Yeah. So we were really into gravity. I like to think we were the modern Isaac Newtons of our generation.
Right. I mean,
yeah. We were destined for great things.
Destined for great. Obviously, that's
why. Look at me now, Mom.
Yeah. Look at you now. In the middle of your own radio section from 7 to 8.
Exactly.
At Tufts.
So there are a couple things that I wanted to bring up that are just open discussions. And one of them is, so I wanted to open up to the phone lines and ask the question to anybody listening, what makes you anxious? And this being a college campus, I figured we would start out with a topic. You don't have to talk about this particular topic, but Tom and I are going to be talking about it.
Yeah.
Student loans. So whatever makes you anxious, whatever you want to bring up, our studio line is 855-915-9636. So call in. Let's talk about it. So
don't be afraid.
Yeah, exactly. Listen to Tom. Don't be afraid. So Tom.
Yes.
Just shoot. What are your thoughts on I know that's a crazy thing to
bang.
I know that's a crazy thing to just dump on you, but basically what are your thoughts on the student loan situation? Not necessarily just your own student loans if you have them, but in totality, what could be done to help figure this situation out?
Well, I think first off, it's simple. Less people
that's
in school.
That's a great way to start.
I think that's the easiest way to start. Is
okay.
Less people in school or so. And what that means is, you know, have the high school GED worth more in some capacity, whether that's minimum wage or not, or have more tech schools. So you have tech schools in high school, but maybe convert some community colleges or certain colleges or the associates to more tech-based industries, because you know, at the end of the day, you know, cars need fixing, things need fixing, and you know, you don't necessarily have to be in a lot of debt, you know, or any debt at all to, you know, be a mechanic, be a plumber. And you know, like some of these people have been saying, like Jordan Peterson or whatever, he talks about, like, well, I mean, there's less of a competition in a plumber, but like to be a really, really good plumber, you know, you might not be making, you know, six figures or maybe low six figures, but you know, with the amount of debt, like the average debt, which is like, I don't know, 30K or more, if that's pretty much down to zero, you know, what's the big deal if you're only making 80K for being a really good plumber? It's not 80K minus 30K.
It's a good point. I think that you can make a real killing if you really work at a specific trade.
Yeah.
A lot of people look down upon it. Mm-hmm. And I think that Mike Rowe has done a really good job. The Dirty Jobs guy has done a really good job at promoting alternative types of education to the traditional brick and mortar university and I should say liberal arts type education. Okay, so that's one thing that really is more geared towards a solution that would help people not go into student debt who don't yet have student debt.
Right.
What would you say, do you have any ideas about how to help the situation of students who already have debt accumulated?
Oh, like who already have debt accumulated or for future students that would accumulate debt?
The piece that you said already would help students who have not yet accumulated debt.
Right.
Could help future students, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have any specific ideas of what might help students who currently have debt? Who have gone through college or are currently going through college, and it wouldn't exactly make sense to just career change to a vocation or something like that.
Well, I mean, I do know of, like, you see it all the time, like the National Guard station. So, you know, there's military programs that offer tuition reimbursement for entering in the military. So that is an idea I've had of maybe there's, you know, let's say you've gotten your undergraduate degree and you're in a lot of debt, but you're in a field that, you know, if you want to get the max amount of money, you need, you know, that 2 years master's program. You know, you need your master's. So maybe there can be certain master's programs or undergraduate programs in which there's tuition reimbursement if you meet certain criteria.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
Because we're talking about people who are already in debt, and what, you know, is unfortunate for those folks is that, you know, a master's degree is the next step, so that's more debt. So maybe there can be some type of loan reimbursement for reaching these special criteria, or I don't know, maybe we could have a system where certain you join the military for a couple of years, like South Korea, and you can, you know.
Oh, our citizens join the South Korean military?
join the South Korean military. Or
I actually am intrigued by that. I think that that could work for some amount of people, and I am disturbed by the fact that a lot of people just by default get a master's degree or a secondary degree because that's what other people are doing. Rather than thinking, what am I going to get this degree?
What are the financial?
What is valuable? I think that, unfortunately, a lot of people are really confused that cost is the same thing as value. So they think if I'm paying hundreds of thousand dollars for this, then it has to confer value upon me. And that's one of the things that we never really went into as a society. I think we just simply said, your ticket to the American dream is college education. Yeah. And we never said, oh, by the way, it matters the type of thing that you study.
Yeah.
And the amount that you're paying for the thing matters. That you study. It matters not because something is inherently better than another thing, but different professions have different economic utilities and economic value. So, you know, if you're paying a steep premium price for an education that has not much economic utility, then you're going to be in deep debt unless you have a family that has lots of money that can support
lots of disposable income where you win the lottery.
Yeah.
Is that? Play those mega bucks.
Exactly.
Win the lottery, all your problems go away, but no.
So I think reframing so that students going in, because it's such a tough time when you're 18 deciding what you want to be. I had an issue where I just went, I mean, thankfully I decided I wanted to be something that didn't put me into deep debt, because I was a mechanical engineer, right?
Yeah.
But I, at the same time, whether you choose something that has more economic utility or not, you're not necessarily choosing something at 18 that you know you want to do for the rest of your life. It's a really tough ask for an 18-year-old.
Yeah, because you may think you know, but you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like that was my problem too. I went into a field that, you know, if it paid off, would have, you know, been a great, you know, money maker and whatnot. But it turned out after, you know, I just didn't want to do it anymore and went to other options. But, you know, you're kind of hindered in a way in that it's like, oh, it's great, you got more options, but now you're saddled with all this debt. And it's just unfortunate.
It's like putting an anchor around somebody's neck and throwing them into the water and go, swim. Now you're in the open ocean. Now you have freedom.
Here, Johnny, you get the flippers, and Sally, you get the cement blocks.
Yes.
All right, we're going to see who goes across the river first.
Yeah, that's a dark... It's a dark joke. It's amusing, but it's kind of what it's like.
I kind of wanted to paint the picture.
Yeah. I agree with you. It is like that. So there are a couple ideas that I've heard of that I think are intriguing, and one of them is that companies are investing in students, basically buying their debt and then garnishing some of their wages.
I see.
Until they're essentially investing in students who have potential but who also have serious debt.
The student draft or student stock exchange?
Sort of like that. It kind of sounds like indentured servitude or something like that, but it's still, you know, it's a way out of debt. Another thing that I thought was interesting is it's a 10 for 10 idea where you, for 10 years, give 10% of your wages to pay off the loan, and after that time, anything remaining is forgiven.
Wow.
So
that's a great idea.
I don't know how something like that could effectively be implemented, but
or how viable
we need creativity, because right now we're getting ideas that are extreme on either end, which are, who cares? These students made their own bed, let them live in it, which I think is somewhat short-sighted, because I think that eventually, even if you want to have that more self-interested outlook, eventually it's going to come back to you anyway. It's like if somebody said, oh, there are drug addicts in the town park that are just lying around shooting up, like, let them, like, I don't want my money to go towards treatment programs or anything. Let's just let that play out. And, and you go, okay, well, over time, as people die and as there's a public health crisis, you're going to have to either invest a lot of money into cleaning that up and reducing sickness, or you're going to have to put people in jail or something like that. So, like,
or lead to the spread of
like,
disease.
It's kind of like a pay me now or pay me later thing. So it's the same thing in my mind with student debt. It's like, you know, having a significant chunk of the population straddled with debt is extremely economically limiting to everyone at the end of the day.
Right. Whether paid all off now or don't help them out at all.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's very, you know, cyclical. It's going to come back eventually. It's going to bite you in the back eventually. You know, it's just a different form. Like you said, like, look at some parts of California, like San Francisco or LA, like the Skid Row, the homeless population, like the bubonic plague is coming back.
Yeah.
And those, in those areas. So that's what Pat was getting at. Well, oh, like, you know, with the drug addicts, oh, just leave them at Skid Row. You know, they dug their own grave. You know, if they want help, they can get it, but I'm not going to do anything. Well, now you got bubonic plague in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
bubonic plague.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The, which is going to cost Black Death, right? Isn't that what
the Black Death
thing?
That killed a third of the, you know, human population back in Europe.
I like to think we could tackle it a little bit better these days. I like to think that a bubonic plague would be no match for our modern healthcare, but I don't know.
Kill it with fire?
Kill it with fire.
Kill it with fire. No, but seriously, yeah, but now you got to take money and resources to combat that, so it's not a, you know, bigger, you know, medical emergency, or you know what I mean? That so that's it's not good at the end of the day. It's not helpful.
Yeah, and then you're also hearing, so I guess that what I just said was more like I don't know if it was socialist minded, but you're getting these other solutions from the more socialist side, which are equally foolish, like forgive all the debt outright. Just forgive it all. What does that mean for people lending money if the debts that they have owed to them can just be forgiven at any point? And
it's bigger than student loans.
You don't just, I think a lot of people are under the illusion that you just print more money endlessly and that there's no consequence.
Or that we're off the gold standard and money. We're in trillions of debt anyway that's going up, that it doesn't matter. But
yeah, you can't just forgive all debt. So
might as well be anarchy, right?
Yeah.
If we're talking about that, might as well.
It is a bad idea. So we need creative ideas. And
yeah, I like that idea because I think like the almost like the draft, or like they put stock in you, and that can be an incentive too, where, you know, because when you take out a lot of loans, there's a certain, you know, GPA and requirements that you want to keep. Mm-hmm. But keeping that idea in mind, you know, like companies, if they want to invest in you, then just like how, you know, with a lot of loans and tuition, you can keep it down by having good grades. Well, you know, if you're like in the, let's say the top 15, top 10% of the college or your major, and that can be a reward, and these companies, you know, are kind of just looking at you more, right? Isn't that what you're getting at? Like,
yeah.
What do we got?
Looks like we're getting a call on phone number one.
All right.
Let me try to do this. You just have to do something in the background to distract the fact that, that I'm on a call.
Distracted, you're on a call.
Just
beatbox or something like that. Hey, can you hear me? Hey, how's it going? What's your name, caller? Thaddeus. How's it going, Thaddeus? Do you have a question or a comment? What's up? You have a comment. Okay, what's your comment? All right, if I put you on the air, would you have a somewhat cognizant question to ask or a comment to make?
Let's see what he comes up with.
All right.
You gonna do this?
All right, well, I can't put you on the air if you're gonna say things like that.
Oh, I can't imagine what he's saying.
I got you. But I could if you are contained.
I wonder if this caller's gonna be contained. Is he gonna go for it?
Okay, cool. So I'll patch you through then.
All right. We're doing this then. Gonna patch him through?
All right, caller. Your name is Thaddeus, and you had a question or comment about what we were talking about. Student loans, I believe.
I did. You know, you guys are talking about people's anxiety with the student debt crisis, and I think there's a couple fairly straightforward solutions. The first thing is to stop digging the hole, right? The first thing you do when you realize you're in a hole is to stop digging.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that the whole balloon in college debt has really been caused directly by the government. Once they started subsidizing anyone's loans and guaranteeing them, they basically gave colleges an excuse to just jack prices to the moon, and there's no slowing down of that in sight.
So,
and, I mean,
can you explain that a little bit more? That the way that that works for people who might be less familiar, might not see the connection?
Sure. So, you know, historically, an 18-year-old is a horrible investment for a bank. So, you know, to make college more attainable for more people, rather than just, you know, the children of rich kids, which is kind of how it used to be, or people who are just geniuses who got, you know, a merit-based scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The government decided to step in and they guarantee the loans of people through, you know, FAFSA and the other, you know,
Is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, are those also equivalent?
No, that's for mortgages. Same
No. Sorry, I'm not thinking of Fannie. Isn't there another, there's another name for FAFSA? No, it's not
there
FAFSA.
Okay. There is another one. It's another, you know, big government bank guarantee,
yeah.
Basically.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so the government, in its, you know, obviously unintended consequences, right? So in their nice idea to let everyone go to college, they basically created this huge supply of money, and there's only so many colleges, and, you know, they basically, and not to mention, you know, there's plenty of people out there who want your money, so there's also all these, you know, less than reputable for-profit colleges that came out of nowhere. And they're not giving anyone a quality education, but they're just taking tons of money and leaving people without a good future and now, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, possibly.
That sounds like a bit of a racket. So the way that I think of it, Thaddeus, is it's sort of like, well, I guess a lot of people think about it like this, but, mm-hmm. you know, the term bubble comes up repeatedly. So it's sort of, I think about what's been done with college education and the promise that it's people's ticket to the American dream without really adding any additional explanation. I see that as similar to people telling people that owning a home is their ticket to the American dream, just like, you know, pre-2008 when it was, oh, we need to get everybody into a house, and, you know, then you ended up with all these subprime mortgages, right? Do you see that as similar, or am I just kind of off the mark?
Exactly the same thing. Anytime the government gets involved in what are otherwise fairly well-functioning free markets, it creates a lot of discrepancies between reality and, you know, what should be, really. I mean, you look at it with the Federal Reserve, which shouldn't exist, you know, driving interest rates to zero, so anyone who wants to save money is getting killed because they can't, you know, make any interest. And basically now America's debt burden is higher than it was pre-2008. But people don't really think about that.
Yeah, because it's uncomfortable,
because
right?
They're trying to say, like, mm-hmm. oh, we're trying to keep unemployment low. But what they're really doing is just pushing off, you know, instead of another Great Recession, like, the next one's going to be a blowout because they have no tools to mitigate any kind of economic downturn now.
So it's a kicking the can down the road scenario. I know my dad loves that.
They're like, la, 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 I can't hear you. Yeah. What? No, everything's fine. Just keep doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean,
that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, why do markets move so much based on what a few, you know, quiet government bureaucrats say every couple months?
Yeah.
It's really madness if you think about it.
Right.
Can you recommend any sources of information on these topics that people who aren't too familiar with economics and maybe not the daily news and what's going on, somebody who with a basic understanding of things could sort of jump into and enjoy and understand?
Sure. I mean, if you want to go a little bit more the historical route, anything like House of Cards, the movie and the book is kind of based off of.
Okay. Is that, do you know who wrote that off the top of your head?
I don't, but okay. I also know Michael Lewis did a similar book called Boomerang.
Oh yeah.
Anything by Peter Schiff.
I think I've heard of that.
He's basically like an anarcho-capitalist, but.
Oh, I know Peter Schiff. I've heard him interviewed before.
He was one of the guys who called the original 2008 bubble, and he's basically saying we're actually far worse off today. So, I think there's a lot of people out there who, when they don't have a big political agenda, they realize that it's a big smoke and mirrors show right now.
Hmm. Somebody recommended the other day to me, Thaddeus, a movie called Margin Call, which is similar to what you were discussing with Peter Schiff, he predicted. Yeah. Is it a good movie?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Absolutely worth watching. And it's kind of like a dramatized version of what happened at the beginning of the crisis.
Okay.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Awesome.
There's another one out there called, I forgot what it's called, but it basically is like surrounding Timothy Geithner and the other gentleman who was running the Federal Reserve at the time of the crisis.
Who was Geithner again? Was he one of the people running the Federal Reserve?
He was like the, I think, vice president of the Federal Reserve. He was like, or the Treasury. He was like pretty up there in the Bush administration.
Oh, okay.
So, that's my two cents. I just think that, too many people want, eventually, especially with all these political candidates offering, everything under the sun for nothing, people are going to learn that there's no such thing as a free lunch, and honestly, it usually ends up costing a lot more.
Yeah.
If you just paid for it yourself.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right about that. So thank you for your comments and for being civil, and this was a good conversation, and thank you for just bringing up some sources that make this information more accessible to people, because I think a lot of people, they might be thinking in their heads, this is madness or what's going on, but they don't really know, they don't really have a way into it to really start to understand and learn more because it's intimidating. So thank you.
Well, for we all Google, everything. Don't we?
Yeah,
we all true. Google, but we all need other foots in the door.
But the problem today is we have so much information that sometimes just finding the right information is the problem. It's the reverse of being, what maybe our parents grew up in is limited information. So
right.
Anyway, thank you for your call, Thaddeus.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you.
All right, Tom,
back on
to you and I. So yeah, I like that call. That was pretty good.
Yeah. No, I was, I don't know, I was trying my best. There's probably a lot of dead air there, but I was focused on your conversation. I was just like, oh man, this is going to be an interesting caller. But no, he was a lot more civil than I was just kind of, mimicking. I was just like, is this how it's, that turned out to be great. He was great. Yeah.
He was, when he first called, he was, more animated, and he toned himself down, which is good. I was just saying, keep it radio friendly.
But, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I understood that's kind of what I needed from when he first made the call too. And by the way, Thaddeus, a name that you don't hear that much these days.
I know.
So
a name of intelligence. Clearly, no.
Well, it seems like it. I always appreciate a good name that I haven't heard for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But what about names like? I think these names are making a comeback: Muriel and Eustace, the Courage of the Cowardly Dog names.
Muriel. I'm hungry. I love that show.
Yeah.
But yeah, Muriel Eustace, yeah.
Eustace.
Fun fact, it's spelled E-U.
Oh,
Eustace, yeah.
What do you think it was spelled like?
I don't know. Well, it's not spelled how it's, pronounced. Okay. You think it'd be spelled some different, but...
That's what I thought it was spelled like, to be honest with you.
To be honest? All right, well, I had no idea when I was watching that show, but yeah. Do you think Ulysses is making a comeback? Speaking of you names.
Ulysses?
Ulysses, I don't know.
No,
maybe as a middle name. Maybe as a middle name.
Ulysses is nuts.
Grant?
Grant, sure. I mean, I don't think Grant went anywhere.
It's still here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Grant's, okay. All right.
Grant never went anywhere.
Oh, all right. Well, excuse me.
Yeah, but there will be. I think it's hilarious that so many dads wanted to name their son Max or Maximilian after a gladiator.
Oh, really? That was a thing?
No, I'm sorry. Not Maximilian. Maximus.
Maximus. His name is Maximus. Yeah.
And
I prefer Maximus
myself.
Over Maximilian.
All right. Max is no disrespect to Maxes out there. Max is a good name, but I would be a little bit disturbed if my parent named me just after the movie of the day.
Movie of the day, yeah. Well, you didn't have any ideas? You didn't have any relatives that you liked?
How many girls do you think were named Rose after Kate Winslet in Titanic? Probably a lot.
So much.
Yeah.
So much it would probably be obnoxious, but...
That's like slightly better than if your parent put your name up for auction at a gas station to win a free gas card and had your name be...
Yeah, what is this, Mississippi?
Had your name ampersand asterisk / GMLR.
You could just make that up. Yeah, like it's...
Yeah, I'm glad that I was getting.
Is it like a swear word? It's like we can't say on TV. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what people would ask all the time. It would be quite a distraction. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at PSAs right now because it's about time to read a PSA.
Oh, I see. I was wondering what you were doing with that book. I'm just
This old binder right here. It's actually got some good PSAs in it, I have to say. Some of them are completely in a weird format, but that's all right.
Let me know when you do your thing. But yeah, I know. I thought it was kind of...
Why don't you pick out a PSA?
Want me to pick out a PSA?
Yeah, there's a big book of PSAs right
any,
here.
Any secret to it? Just find one I like?
Just find one that is on a topic that maybe you relevant? Find interesting or that speaks to you in some way. And you know what? I don't have to read it. You can read it if you're comfortable doing that.
I'd be honored.
Yeah. Each one of those. Like,
what a great way to introduce me to the
Of course. The fine
public.
Craft of PSA reading.
Yes.
Yeah.
No problem. That could be like a podcast. PSA podcast.
PSA podcast. It could podcast. Be like... It's just endless PSAs.
Yeah, just endless PSAs. Or, you could make entertaining PSAs. Yeah, do like Mad Libs PSAs.
Mad Lib PSAs?
Yeah, exactly. You know how there's Mad Libs? Just have a PSA or have like viewers submitted or just Mad Lib ones where like people just pick out random words and you have to read what they picked out.
That would be chaos. That's like that boat competition where it was they named the boat Bodie McBoatface because that was the number one
Bodie McBoatface
number one recommended name. You never put these things up to public polls. It's you end up just or the people who go online and put on the May hold up the signs the that say roast me, not realizing that they're about to just get completely fed through the wood chipper. You know what I'm talking about? Where it might be on Reddit. I don't know. I don't really use Reddit that.
Well, I've seen the roast me on Reddit.
It's probably Reddit then. Yeah,
people just post up signs of themselves and just say roast me they set up a scenario. I don't know what their end game is.
Yeah, it gets deep and dark and personal very quickly. So anybody that does that, I don't think knows what's really headed their way.
Oh, I've gone too far. I got to go back.
That's all right. We could do a roast battle on this show, too, at some point. I've done some roasting before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I can't say that's my foray, but why not?
At my fraternity's... A formal.
Yeah.
We had two formals that I had gone to, and I was in charge of superlatives, which are generally nice things that people are voted for, like, oh, you have a nice smile, or... you are friendly and stuff like that, and I just kind of roasted everybody
on why they're not. Yeah. It's the opposite of why they suck.
Yeah. Pretty so, much. You know, I could do roasts if necessary, but
okay.
Maybe this show isn't the best place.
I think I have a PSA that might speak to me.
All right. I see the photo in this PSA. I think I know why it speaks to you.
Oh my. No. No, it's not like that, but shall I?
Yeah.
Go ahead. All right. So this is organ donation PSA. Mm-hmm. Was I not supposed to read that part?
No, you're supposed to.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I love how I'm saying this on the air as if people are going to call in and say, no, you idiot.
No, this is a meta show. Like I said before, people are, they feel like they're in the studio with us right now. They're participating. They're hearing all the mistakes and the issues that arise. And
is that what that is? I thought this place was just haunted.
Up when I'm not pushing the buttons properly.
Oh my God, look at that. Is that a book that's floating?
No, because there are no books in here.
Oh, then what are those behind you?
Those are records.
Records. Well, welcome to the current year where I don't know what records are.
Sad.
That's Tom Dixon speaking. Anyway, organ donation. Signing up to be an organ donor is one of the most generous things you can do, especially when you consider that a single donor can potentially save 8 lives. That's 8 people who won't have to spend agonizing months or years on the transplant waiting list. Who will get a second chance all because you agreed to donate some body parts you won't be able to take with you anyway. To become an organ donor, register through your state agency. Locate your state registry on the organ donor website at organdonor.gov. Repeat, organdonor.gov. Designate your choice to be an organ donor on your driver's license. If you do not have a driver's license, print a donor card and carry it with you. This provides you with legal consent to donate organs, eyes, and tissues for transplants. Fill out your advance directives, will and living will, include your organ donation. These legal documents speak for you when you are not able to speak for yourself. And lastly, this has been a public service announcement from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Awesome choice. I actually really like that.
How was that?
It was good. I mean, it was good reading, but it was also a really interesting PSA.
It was very, very, very cluttered because I don't know if people can see, well, they can't see this, but like the mic is so big and it's like in my way. So like when I was stuttering or stopping, I was... I couldn't read it.
It can be a little unwieldy. So let me just say that, yes, donating to science in any way, aside from organ donor, you can be a blood donor, whether that's platelets or whole blood or plasma, any of those things, donating bone marrow, stem cells,
yes.
Donating. You don't have to be dead to donate to science. You know, it's not like a lot of people are afraid that when they are an organ donor that they're just going to be ransacked immediately, even if they're like, you know, not actually dead yet. That's not generally how it goes. But I just want to say that I don't know if it works this way, but how many times do you think an organ can be reused?
How many times?
Because I'm thinking maybe if my penis goes into the next century, keeps getting reused over and over and over again to new people.
The all hail Pat Clarkin's
exactly.
penis.
Exactly.
So. I don't know. I mean, just give it blood and all you need is blood, right? Just blood and an IV, and that sucker will last for centuries.